You're listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. It turns out these guys are all brothers because it says Jack Lynch comedian, Joey Carroll comedian, and Bob Carney comedian. They all have the same last name.
Yes, yeah, so it's comedian. The Three Stooges.
We'd like to welcome Jack Lynch, Joey Carroll, and Bob Carney.
Well, we all have the same mother. She was a slut.
She worked at the comedy clubs.
That's right.
So we're talking about having fun in recovery.
She was a
waitress. We're talking about having fun in recovery tonight, and there's none happening in here.
So we're going to be very serious, and we're going to talk about very serious issues. So the first thing we're going to talk about is
the baseball season beginning this week, and So any sports stuff, you guys?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Jerry's back on air, but man, his son, talk about a hitter.
Too soon?
Okay.
He's a swing in this guy. Red Sox need more Cro-Magnons in the lineup.
Just keep enabling him, Jerry. Everything's okay. Keep enabling him.
So we're talking about fun and recovery. We're talking about the Red Sox. New year. Hope springs eternal in sports.
Come on, it was a good year last year.
It was a great year.
As I hear.
I'm a Tigers fan, so hope springs eternal.
That's right. You could be a Cubs fan. Could be worse.
Yeah. Well, it took a bombing to do it, but yeah.
Yeah.
They started out light last year. They started out light last year as well. And then it's like, hey, wait a minute. Somebody missed with our city. Let's get a ring.
That's right. Let's get a ring. And they did, right?
And you're the only one that's excited about it.
Me?
Yeah, no. We're all very excited
about it.
Come on.
My dad's ashes are at Fenway Park. But don't tell anybody, okay?
Yeah, your dad's what? Your dad smoked at Fenway Park?
He was on fire. Smoked
his band for 20 years.
You got to sneak in the men's room there and kind of cup it so nobody sees. You know,
that's right.
You got to do it on the sly, really. Standing room only is your best bet with that.
I wasn't there for that, so I didn't break the actual law. No.
No laws were broken in the disposing of these ashes. So you guys, Jack, you've got a organization called Comics for Recovery, correct?
Yes.
Comicsforrecovery.com. How did that get started, Jack?
We basically started by after doing a few different fundraisers for some local either sober houses or addiction treatment centers. We realized that a lot of these people come up to us after the show and said, this is the first time they'd ever laughed in recovery, and they, you know, it was such a good time, like forgetting their issues of the day. And it slowly just built up. We just realized there was a market for either people needed fundraisers for treatment centers or just to have a sober show that people can go to and feel safe and not be around substances or alcohol. So it's been almost 10 years now, I think.
Really?
Like that.
Seems longer.
Really?
Yeah. I'm really good at math.
Still waiting for that check to clear.
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
I got to say, the reflection of the sun setting off the building on Jack is just striking.
That's right.
Brings up my eye.
It does.
I'm aroused.
I've seen you in a whole new light.
Oh,
thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
I should point out Jack and I are sharing a microphone, but it's okay because I have a condom on.
Our producer is holding her head already.
Somebody's getting called into the office tomorrow morning.
Where's the hate mail go?
So is it difficult to get sober when you're a performer like you guys?
I don't know. I mean, I got sober before, so I missed out on all that madness that came along. I just got the bad gigs after I was sober.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You didn't have to go.
Yeah, and which made it worse because I realized how bad they were.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, look, I'm playing in some basement somewhere.
Oh, we thought we were having fun. Yeah. Actually, I cleaned up. I sobered up before I started doing comedy as well.
So. I dabbled in comedy a little bit before I got sober, but I would have a few shots to relax, and apparently I had too many shots, and I was apparently too relaxed. So that didn't work out, and eventually I came back full steam when I was a few years sober. And took it more seriously.
I know quite a few comedians through you guys, And I know there's a lot of you guys in recovery. And by you guys, I mean the Irish. But, but I know that I know there's a lot of comedians in recovery, so one would assume there's a lot of comedians not in recovery that are in need of it. Why is that?
Because they get their drinks for free.
Bingo, yes.
Some clubs used to actually pay you in cocaine.
Is that true?
You want coke or you want cash?
Really?
Yeah. Or you could do a half and half, which meant you would give them the cash back for coke at the end of the night.
That's right.
I think the three of us kind of came into the business like around the same time. I think that's fair.
Yeah, it was around 11 o'clock.
Right, exactly.
In North Reading.
And it was like... North Reading. There's a fish place, yeah. It was kind of like at the tail end of like a really big comedy boom in Boston, and there were always tons and tons of stories, lots of coke stories, lots of drug stories of like of guys doing just long sets being paid in coke, lots of cocaine everywhere. The old Comedy Connection on Charles Street, I actually saw this in the back room. Somebody had I shouldn't say his name. I guess it was a lot of. Had taken some whiteout, and he had like drawn a line in whiteout on the desk just to see how many people would go for it. And I guess a lot of guys thought it was a line of coke, and they tried to, take it, wah, wah. So, yeah.
Oh.
So it was kind of prevalent, yeah. So there was a lot of coke. There was a lot of drugs going around in the scene back in the day.
I think Carrot Top's the one who left that.
Yeah, he took the pile, though. Jerk.
And I'm sure there's at least one guy out there still trying to do that line somewhere.
It's one of those prop guys.
I mean, we've been around so long, we remember when Carrot Top was a thin man. Yeah. I mean, we go way back.
He wasn't on steroids.
Long time.
Yeah.
Well, now, so then you have all the comedians using various substances or, not at this point. And then you have the audiences, which I remember, going to one of your shows, Jack, at Nick's or something like that, and there was a bachelorette party there, and they were hammered. How do you deal, if you're in sobriety, how do you deal with audience members that are half in the bag?
You pray for the guy she's marrying.
So, I mean, how do you deal with it? I mean... Because the expectation of a lot of people when they go to comedy clubs is that they are going to be drinking too much.
We basically just run through our set and say, leave it on the dresser.
And so you
yes, we.
And so you run out the door.
Close our eyes and think of England. Yeah.
I know that I was at a club in Florida one time. In the middle of my set, four cops came in and grabbed this guy and his wife and dragged him out of the club.
Really?
Apparently, they had done something and wouldn't pay their tab or they were too drunk. And so I'm like, and then I'm like, the crowd goes nuts. And I go, how do I follow that?
All I can really do is give it play by play at that point.
Yeah.
What a little cop getting a good one there.
But if anything, I think it just reinsured my own recovery.
Right.
Because I just saw what a mess people were. And the biggest compliment I ever got from a club owner, he actually said, you're the most normal comic I've ever seen. You come in, do your job, you're not trying to pick up the waitresses, and then you leave. Like he said, thank you.
That's when we knew there was something funny about Jack.
Yes, that's right. He also knew all the lyrics to the Pajama Game by heart.
Well, who doesn't?
So if, you, the song. If you're not drinking before shows to relax, what do you do to relax that you can say over the radio?
Well, I masturbate.
Jack?
I used to have, some of the guys used to give me a hard time. Everyone were doing shots. I would eat a turkey sandwich like an hour before the show. People are like, you want a turkey sandwich? My friends were giving me a hard time. I'd literally have a, because I had this, the tryptophan kind of calmed me down a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I realized the first bunch of sets I did, I didn't eat because I was so nervous, but then I'd be on stage like almost shaking from low blood sugar. So I realized, all right, if I have like a turkey sandwich like an hour before, I'm a little better.
Self-medicating is what you were doing.
Yeah, tryptophan. That's what I recommend.
Remember the wheatgrass phase?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I had a couple of years I was doing wheatgrass before a show. That was good.
Staying healthy on the road. If you go out there and like Joey, you play in Atlantic City, which is like the center of conspicuous consumption on the East Coast. Are you surrounded by a lot of people in the business that are using, or is it the expectation that everybody's going to be professional?
No, most of the people now are very professional, at least at the good gigs, because they want to come back.
They want to keep them.
You know, it's just, I mean, there's all that other debauchery that goes on in those places. I mean, you're in a casino, and these girls that go out to dance at the discos, they rent a room, and they go up, put basically lingerie on, and then come downstairs to go into the club.
Now, what casino is that?
Oh, it's hell.
And I mean, you're walking through the casino going, did I miss something somewhere? Am I overdressed? And people will go, assure me that, no, you're not overdressed. As a matter of fact, you should put on a sweater.
We have an email from a listener who wants to hear Les Journey.
And maybe less John.
So you're doing insult comedy now. You're all of a sudden you're Don Rickles.
That's what I wish of. So I'd love to hear people's stories. Bob, how did you get sober, and you know, kind of what convinced you that you needed to?
Oh, everybody's got a story. Let me give you a better story.
I have a friend.
Well, you know, I hit rock bottom. I bottomed out. I woke up in a beach house with all the windows open and snow blowing into the room on a wet mattress, and I decided I have to do something different. 2 years later.
Yeah, restaurant.
Right? Let me flash forward. Oh, okay, I did get into AA, and the grace of God and a lot of friends and a lot of good people, and my mom, who gave me a lot of support, helped me stay that way and just keep it together. And I got sober. I was lucky enough that I was in my early 20s when I got sober. But one of the things I found, I don't know, I just had like a new view of life and like new, you know, well, when I was 25 years old, I realized that the only thing, you stretch longer, I'm not telling, okay. I'm leaving too much out, am I? Okay. 25, I also realized that the only thing in the world I hated more than myself was everything else. So, I get better, things got better through the fellowship of AA. I mean, I OD'd on meetings constantly, living constantly meetings. And I reached a point, it's like, you know, I just felt better about life in general. And even before that damn movie, but The Bucket List came out, I mean, I started making a list of things that I really wanted to do with my life. Now that I had I felt that I had a handle on things, and, you know, I had a new ambition, and I wanted to do things. And the top of that bucket list was doing stand-up comedy, which I had been addicted to since I was a little boy. I haunted the clubs. I got hammered the clubs, watching the local comics. I mean, much through, you know, the late 80s. I was fortunate enough to be in a city at a time when that happened, but I never had the nerve to try it myself. And I always had funny ideas, funny thoughts, and was like, yeah, you should be on a stage. You should be a comedian. You're funny. Here, have another beer. So...
You worked with Crazy Guggenheim?
Exactly, yes. That's right. It was a very, very late gig. Yeah, he wasn't doing that well in those days. I worked with a puppet, yeah. So I had been hanging out at a couple of different clubs, Stitches, The Comedy Connection, Catch a Rising Star, and I bit the bullet, and I signed up for an open mic night, I think, at Catch a Rising Star. Now, at that time, the waiting list was like 2 months. So I got a card saying that, okay, this is your date. And as I got closer and closer to that date, I get more and more nervous. I get more and more worried. And you always hear the stories about guys who have a couple of drinks to, like, loosen up and calm themselves down so they can concentrate. And I was freaked that that was going to happen to me, that I was going to do that. So there was one Saturday afternoon, I was driving around Braintree, and I just happened to go to this meeting that I had never gone to before. I had hit most of the meetings on the South Shore where I'm from, but I just, for some reason, I just hadn't hit this one. So I go to this meeting, and I sat down. It was like your basic AA meeting, and a guy walked through the door that you've seen on TV, that you've seen in movies. I can't say his name, obviously, but it's like he walked into this AA meeting, and he was like one of my favorite comedians. Behind the door, behind him, came another comedian from the local scene. And another one, This was the time when the Improv was open in Boston in the late 80s. And it turned out this was the comedians' meeting. And when a guy came into town and he didn't really know anybody, this is the meeting that they would take him to. So there was like six different comics that I knew of. And, oh my God, this is like the meeting I was meant to be at on that day. So I went up and I just introduced myself. And I'm like, I don't want to embarrass you, but I've seen you before and I'm a big fan and I think you're terrific. And another comic said, oh, well, you know, and they started talking to him about comedy and about the thing I was going through. And one of the other comics, a local guy, said, listen, if you like, I mean, I've gone through that too. I got sober doing comedy. If you like, I gave me a phone call for you, you know, maybe get you on stage earlier than that. And listen, here's my number. If you need to talk about it, please, by all means. And so the next night I was on stage for the first time and it got good and I liked it. And that guy has been a friend and a mentor ever since then.
Wow, that's a great story.
So it was a miracle. It was all a miracle happens. There's no coincidences. Everything for a reason.
Okay, can you, that's an amazing story.
It is an amazing story.
Now here's Jill with the weather.
So Joey.
Yeah,
you have the short version, right?
Yeah, I'll never forget the day Bob walked into that meeting and said hi to me. Thank you. Good night.
See what I did there? I turned it.
I was drinking a lot. I mean, not professionally, but I did have some offers, and you know, I didn't even realize I had a problem because all the people I hung around with were drunks, and that was normal to me. You know, if somebody went to work Friday without staying out all night Thursday, I was like, "Well, you're sick." You know, what happened? You know, we missed you. And it was just like, no, I have a life. And it was like, all right, you're going to cop an attitude with me. And, you know, I was going fishing with my cousin, and we were meeting up like Saturday morning at 6 o'clock, and he was in the program, and he was working it and doing everything right. And I would show up just, you know, I'd pull up sideways in front of the house ready to fish. And he'd look at me and go, why do you do this to yourself? And I go, because I earned it. I deserve it. I worked hard all week. I owe it to myself and my family to wake up face down in the gutter. And I didn't do it last night, but I'll try again tonight. Yeah. And so after about maybe a couple of months of that, you know, just seeing how I'd show up at the house and I'd be a wreck and he'd be on a second cup of coffee. And he wasn't pressuring me or anything, but I just saw that there was a better way. And I asked him, I said, you know, can I go to one of those Amway meetings with you? And because I could use a deal on shampoo, whatever it is you people do. And he brought me into one, and I just sat there, and I listened, and I went, wow, that's a whole different perspective on things. And I came back, and I kept coming back, and I never went back to my old life. I mean, I saw my old friends, but, you know, the crazy Joey stories were pretty much, well, not really a thing of the past, but like the ones I didn't want to remember were a thing of the past. I mean, I still would have stories. Like, people would come up to me and go, wow, you must have been trashed last night. I go, why? They went, well, you call me all sorts of horrible things. And I went, oh, no, you really are. You know, I was sober. Honest with you. And that was it. And then, you know, a few years later, I'm still, you know, doing the right thing. And I get into comedy on a dare. And Bob Carney was actually the guy that I spoke to about doing an open mic. We went out and had lunch.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so yeah, I think you might have blacked out. And you meant well. But, you know, he said, there's an open mic. And I went to my first open mic in Billerica, Mass., hosted by the fabulous John David. And I was dry heaving in the parking lot because it was a really big thing. I was nervous about it because if it didn't go well there, I wouldn't get to work with any of the other knuckleheads again. So it went well. I had a blast. And
you had a standing ovation that night, didn't you?
It was pretty close. It was really weird.
The first time on stage.
Yeah. It was kind of, yeah, they chanted my name, and it's not happened since. So they lured me in with the promise of a fun time, and then they beat me. And it was it was really funny. I mean, I went to my first open mic driving a Maserati, and within like 18 months, I was driving a VW Rabbit, and I was so much happier, you know, because the chicks really dig the little V-dubs. And that was it. And I mean, to maintain now, I mean, I surround myself with good people, and, you know, I help other people, and, you know, I don't forget who I am, why I'm here, where I came from. And it's been a heck of a run. If it were all to end tomorrow, obviously be way too soon. A lot of people would be upset. But I've had a good run. And that's it. That's my story.
Wow. So they chanted your name?
Yeah, it was fun. I thought it was going to be like that all the time.
He's been chasing it ever since.
Yeah, yeah. That was wild. And so, I never paid for a Coke at the Bill Ricker 99.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. That was a magic time for me.
That was a great place. That was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah. I once sent we had a transvestite that would come in and hang out. We, you know, didn't know him personally, but one night I was sending drinks via the bartender from another comic. And he did. he goes, that big girl's looking at me. And now that's because you've been sending her drinks all night. He goes, no, I haven't. I'm like, Stu, who's been sending her drinks? He goes, Mike. and he was probably one drink away from hooking up in the parking lot at that point, which was fun. Oh, that was a wonderful place.
I think the transvestite was like Jared Remy in like a wig.
So. Oh, it was very funny.
You've been dying for that.
I want to say that this is one of the biggest pleasures about working with At Right Turn is that people like this come through there.
I
and,
know.
You know, you're sitting there, it's a dreary afternoon, and, you know, Jack will come in and tell, like, three terrible jokes, and your whole day is improved. But Jack also
and you
has
didn't
some.
Pay. Yeah.
No, that's right, it's free.
Oh, we pay.
He comes in afternoons. We pay. So, but Jack, your story is not quite as light as the other two stories.
No.
So how'd
no.
you get sober? And
I got
why?
Sober. I got sober. I got sober. My very best friend, a guy I grew up with, actually took his own life. And,
oh.
I know, not funny. And. I had already been drinking heavy at the time, and I drank even heavier then, and I don't recall eating or anything. And 2 months later, I was in rehab with, you know, slippers on and pajamas, and all my friends showed up. I thought people were going to show up and say, why are you doing this? Everyone said, oh, thank God. I did. I thought people were going to talk me out of it. Like, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. But they were so grateful I was there. And when I was there, I met a few people, and I heard of, you know, a few different things, but I literally, at one point, I was going to sign myself out, and because I was kind of second guessing when I stopped trembling after 5 days, I was going to sign myself out. And I had a counselor who actually, I look at this woman saved my life. She said, come in my office for 5 minutes, and she said, when was the last time you finished anything? And I couldn't think of anything. I quit driver's ed. I quit everything. Anything got a little bit difficult, I just quit. So. And it literally, she said, just stay the weekend, because it was a Friday afternoon. I was trying to leave. And she said, stay the weekend, and then, you know, at least you'll have a better start of the week next week, starting on a Monday. And a Friday, you're more likely to relapse. And I knew she was right, and I believed her, and I stayed. And I've never seen that woman since, but I look at that simple question just stopped me. And I get out. I didn't know what to do. I went to a ton of meetings. There's times I was in a ball on my couch. I was a one ball of anxiety, and I had people from AA and different recovery groups that I barely knew came and got me and said, Jack, you're going to be okay. And they literally just helped me get out the door and get to a meeting, and just, it was such a slow process. I mean, I barely spoke in meetings till I was about 3 years clean. I couldn't even, I look at people now that are 6 months sober and they're so articulate. I'm like, I wasn't even close to that.
Yeah.
You know? But I think, and that rehab I was in at the time, I was in, it was a state detox, and I was in there for 10 days. And I could have went to a 28-day cushy program. I could have went to anything. But looking back, I'm glad I went there, because it showed me exactly where I was heading.
Yeah.
You ate exactly what they fed you. You didn't eat till the next day. So And I was with, you know, when I was leaving, a lot of guys said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going home. I live with, I have some roommates." "Oh, you got a place to live? That's awesome." Like, wow. Most of these people did not have a place to live.
Wow. So how'd you get into comedy?
I've been obsessed with it since I was a little kid. I used to sneak out of bed in the morning to watch Carson, at night to watch Carson's monologue. And I actually remember this in junior high and seventh grade in English class. I was the only one who knew what a monologue was.
So we're all going to work on our monologues, kids. I know what they are.
I was the only one who knew. And but I was obsessed with it. And when I was late teens, I was like 18, 19, I used to go into the comedy clubs and watch all the Boston guys, Sweeney and Lenny and all those guys. I was obsessed with them. I would memorize their acts and, you know, tell my friends the jokes. And you know, and I was drinking heavily then, you know, a lot of scotch and a lot of beer. And there's a lot of nights I don't remember who drove home. And my friends would say, "Thanks for driving home." I'm like, "I didn't drive home." "Oh, I thought you drove home." Things like that.
And,
Yeah.
That's right. I do now.
But I always like to say that in the beginning, booze and drugs gave me lots of confidence. In the end, it took it all away. I had nothing. I was a shell of a person. And I forgot how to laugh. And I remember being about 6 months sober. I was in a coffee shop with a bunch of people after a meeting. And I laughed till like tears were coming out of my eyes. And I thought, I hadn't laughed like that since I was a little kid. Mm. And a couple of years later, I heard a guy on the radio, a drive time comic who was horrible. And I said, "I'm funnier than this guy." And I pulled over, and this is when I get back into comedy, and I called Catch a Rising Star and said, "When's your next open mic?" And they signed me up. And
they said, "We have some time with this guy, Bob Carney."
And Joey Carroll.
Hey. And that's how I met these guys.
Bob gave me Jack's number.
Really?
I'll never forget. I called him up, and I went, Bob Carney told me to give you a call. You're booking a room. What was it?
I was hosting an open mic in North Reading.
Yeah.
It was a Kelly's Seafood, but not this Kelly's that we know.
And I had to drop Carney's name to get on. And then it was funny. I met Jack, and it was just hysterical. It was like, my God, dude. It's like the other half of my brain just showed up in a room.
Oh, I introduced Beavis to Butthead.
Yeah. you should be proud.
We should start calling you Mike Judge.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Yeah, we all went to the Beavis and Butthead movie for the noontime, and that came out.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had time.
Beavis and Butthead.
Because comics don't work during the day.
So you guys, I want to ask each one of you, what's the worst gig you've ever done as a comedian?
Oh, like for radio? It's definitely the... No.
Thanks.
Where were you last night, Bob?
How many places am I going to be blacklisted from? Last night was a zoo. It was a pirate ship and everything. The worst place, I didn't even have to think about it. It was a place called Pablo's in Hooksett, New Hampshire.
First paid gig.
Kidding, really?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Tom Mitchell.
That was it. Tom Mitchell.
I loved it.
It was like this taco place where all the bikers in town went. I don't know. Bikers like tacos. And it was one of those, the microphone was right next to the jukebox, which stayed on.
That was
more,
a great gig.
More leather than Bruni and Phil's, all right, in this room. And most of the guys, they come in during the show, and they didn't know there was going to be a comedy show. And half an hour after the show, they didn't know there had been a comedy show. it was like me, Tommy, I think Rick D'Elia, and I think Marcy Rose, who I'd never seen afraid, who doesn't get afraid in bars around bikers. She was worried. Yeah. And it was just awful. It was just, hey, nobody paid any attention to me. One guy passed me a note telling me he was going to cut my throat in the parking lot.
that would put a damper
crowd.
On. Put a damper on one plate.
A little bit, yeah.
The scary thing is when the comics go, "Who books that?"
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. That's odd. I loved that gig. How broken am I?
The thing was, we were like riding home after the gig. And we stuck around because they gave us tacos. As bad as that was, the biker had forgotten about me and this promise to cut my throat, the IOU had given me. And it was like, I started talking to this great girl. We had a really nice time. We really hit it off. All right. Then she had to take off. And driving home, I was telling this to Rick D'Elia. And he goes, I met a girl too. Yeah, we like ready to hit it off too. I said, oh my God. Yeah, well, mine gave me your number. She said, you know, she'd come down to Boston. We can, like, you know, go out and something. And he's like, yeah, mine did too. I mean, she was, like, really friendly and everything. what was yours name? What's the name of yours? I said, Denise. He goes, is this her phone number? And he pulled out a piece of paper. We both scored the great, same great girls.
So, wow.
At Pablo's. Hooks in New Hampshire. Stop in for the tacos. Stay for Denise.
You wipe your feet on the way, wipe your feet on the way out.
What about you, Jack? Worst gig?
The one that keeps popping to mind, there's been many, but the one I did a Christmas party for a construction company in Rhode Island. And I get there, I figure construction company, I wear nice pants, nice shoes, nice shirt. And I get there, and the guy's like, where's your suit? I'm like, I didn't have a suit. I heard it was a construction thing. I heard just dressed kind of casual. He goes, you funny? I said, no, I'm not. And he goes, you better be funny. And they all had like pinky rings, and they said, as soon as they start serving dinner, you're going on.
Oh.
Which is death, as we all know. And they insisted. I said, no, please. I said, I'll wait till dinner's over and I'll do it after. And they said, no, no, you're going on when dinner's served. So half the audience was like this. Turning their back around. And then afterwards, he goes, well, that didn't go as good as I thought it was going to. I don't know if I can pay you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then eventually the guy paid me, but. But yeah, it was just, that was like a painful memory. Just trying to get out of there with my life.
That's paying your dues.
Yeah.
Paying your dues. Joey, worst gig.
Oh.
Besides this.
How do you pick?
Yeah.
How do you pick? I mean, that's the sad part. That's a hard question. I mean, and it shouldn't be, because there were so many over the years. It was like, was it the erotic exotic strippers ball at the channel? That was a bad one.
That was a bad one?
That was a bad one. Yeah.
Why was that one bad?
Because the sound cut out. Oh. As I started my set, and as I said to the strippers, that's like them turning the lights out on you. It's not going to go that well.
All these people going to a stripper's ball didn't like the comedian?
Oh, no, no, that wasn't the point. Then I get in a fight with a guy, an argument with a guy about paying me, and he was one of the bikers that was there, and that got ugly, and I get paid, and I walked out. I was like, if I get killed, I'm going to get killed getting my money, but I'm not going to wait around any longer than I have to. I'm going to get out of here. That was a bad one. Then there was, there's just so many. So many fundraisers. We have great intentions, and it's just, you get there, and it's a horrible setup. There's no light. There's no sound. That people didn't realize there was a show.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between, I mean, like, when you, what's a good night like? I mean, what's the difference between a good night and a bad night?
Oh, people came out for comedy. They paid full price. They didn't start drinking at noon on Tuesday. You know, they're attentive, they're nice, they're polite, they don't throw stuff. You get paid without arguing at the end of the night.
They get stuff.
They understand.
They
the
like
jokes.
Understand. They yeah. like they like came out to see you do well.
Yeah.
And they're smart, they're listening, they're attentive, they're in a mood to laugh. They're I don't want to put too much on there. We're no slouches ourselves. But,
no.
You know,
I'm a tremendous slouch.
Yeah, you're a good tremendous. Don't sell yourself short, George.
I resemble
that. Yes. We just go on. We do our thing, which we've practiced and honed over 20 years, and it's magical. They're like Jack said. There's like no drug that can compare to that. It's the best high there is. I mean, when you really own the room, when they like laugh at everything and they get everything and every punchline goes where it should go, and I mean sometimes you have to wait for the laughter to stop before you start telling the next joke. I mean, it's just magic. That's a buzz that lasts for like an hour after the show. I'm like, you can't get to sleep afterwards because it feels that good. It's like that strong a buzz. That's a good night.
That's amazing.
Do you guys get your material from your sobriety? Do you draw from any of your drinking days or using days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's my whole act.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, some of it comes right from the court report, but other stuff I do remember.
I usually just follow, Joey around with a notebook. Okay.
Joey's throwing away lines. Different kind of lines.
Yeah, just like the old days.
Yeah, and the sober and clean shows, the commercial recovery shows that we've done, those have always been the best because the crowds know how to listen.
Yeah.
They can sit for hours through because they've sat in meetings and know how to listen to people.
And laugh. No.
In the comedy clubs, I used to always know when someone was in recovery, and after the show, they'd come up and go, good to hear you. Like, not you were funny.
Right Turn Radio. We have the Three Stooges.
The Three Amigos?
The Three Amigos. Jack Lynch, Joey Carroll, Bob Carney, and a lot of mayhem. And we're talking about having fun in recovery, comedy recovery, laughing. I'm interested in if you guys have any kind of rituals that you go through before you go on stage.
Bob? Let me see. Yeah, I think you mentioned like in a way to like deal with stress or like
yeah.
I think when you start out, I would say the stress is more like stress. It's more like fear. It's more worry. And again, with the alcoholic mindset, are they going to like me? Am I going to be good enough? Yeah. After a while, with experience, yeah, I think what I try to do anyway is that fear, that excitement, that energy, I try to turn it into adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And the best way for me to do that is I listen to a lot of music. If I'm driving to a gig, I will listen to Nevermind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols. Oh, yeah. I'm really loud. That'll put me into the mindset. Or Funhouse by Iggy and the Stooges. Yeah. Those are like, you know, two of my like good, you know, let's get ready and fight songs. Sorry.
That's neat. Anything else you guys do?
Jack, besides, more turkey sandwiches?
No, I'm not really doing the turkey sandwich anymore. A lot of times I just kind of scribble a kind of a half-assed set list just to kind of get an idea what I want to start with and what I want to end with. And then,
having had dinner with Jack before an event, he's like totally preoccupied. He's totally thinking.
He's all business.
Well, and it's an event that I'm producing and I'm emceeing.
Yes.
I am. If it was just a 30-minute set that I was doing for some stranger, I wouldn't care. But when I'm knowing half the room, it's more nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
It's easier telling jokes to strangers.
Yeah, it is. You know, the pressure is off. The pressure is if you're not going to see these people again. I mean, it's one thing like when you're the funny guy at the party and it's like, hey, you're funny and everything. And you know, like go up to people that don't think you're funny. Then that's when it's hard. When you start doing that, that becomes your rush. And it's like, I don't want to see these people again.
Carney does one voice.
Yes, that's right. Doesn't matter if it's James Mason or John F. Kennedy. That's the voice.
You're the funny guy, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Thank you very much.
Moses, lead your people to the desert. Yeah.
I usually drink a cup of tea. That's my thing. I have a cup of Earl Grey.
Wow.
And then sometimes I'll spit into my left hand and then slap my right into it like David Ortiz. and then I will shake the club owner's hand. And it somehow makes me sleep better at night. But, and I'll also find out what's the minimum amount of time I can do and still get paid. Like they'll go, you know, we're looking for 40, 45. And I go, well, you're doing an intermission, right? They go, yeah, so we're like 30, 35, or you need it to end at a certain time? Because if I can shave a minute off, I'm fine with that, you know? Because, I mean, we all know people that will go on stage and they'll be up there for an hour or an hour and a half, and it's because it's the only place they're happy.
Right.
And I'm very fortunate that when I'm done, I'm driving back home because I've got a life.
Yeah.
And I like what I do. I love what I do, but I don't need to be there an extra minute. I just don't.
So what advice would you give to up-and-coming comics since we have two right now at Right Turn?
It's like AA. You got to keep coming. You keep going and getting on stage and over and over and over.
Yeah. And don't ever underestimate the power of kissing ass. You're listening to three people with 60 years in the business combined that haven't.
That's why we're on this show.
Yeah. That's a skill worth developing. Know what to kiss and when. And frequently. Oh, is this your wife? Yeah. Lovely woman.
Yeah.
Not your husband? I'm sorry.
That's my son.
What do you guys see people get in trouble, in substance abuse trouble in the field? Do you ever talk to them? Do they ever come to you?
Oh yeah. They're not hard to find. I try not to. People like in the business know that you know that I don't drink, that I'm in AA, that you know that I'm not clean and everything. But I try not to lead with it. I mean, you know, you try to hang out, be you know, just another guy. If somebody knows that about you, that's fine. Let them come to you. I won't go out and like try to indoctrinate people or you know recruit people like that. Because I mean, that's a buzzkill for one thing. I mean, that's not a fun guy that anybody wants to hang around with.
Right.
But when they do come through to you, it's like okay, that person has given me their trust. Jack and I were fortunate enough a couple of years ago when we were in Montreal with a good friend of ours, who eventually did come around, who did join the halls, but you know he did show up like on his own, and he was with us, and we don't drink, and he still had a good time. All right,
he was with you.
Yeah,
he had a good time.
I think that weekend we visited 8 stripper bars. He visited 9 because after the last one, we're like, dude, come on, let's do something else. Let's go to a hockey game, something.
Wow.
Yeah.
But they have hockey in Canada?
But a little bit. Yeah.
So they compromised and went to a strip joint called the Penalty Box.
Oh, <a-zing. laughs>
But he eventually did. He turned around. He saw the seed that we had planted. And
oh, that doesn't sound right.
That really didn't. That's not what I meant to say
right
at all.
Joints to sell the seed.
Well, he planted his at the titty bar. So we. Oh, sorry. Can I say that? I'm sorry. Faux pas.
How about them cows?
Yes, right.
That's funny.
But he like did come like around. So it was nice when that happens.
So basically, they know where to find you if they want to get sober. They can, and they've seen that you guys are living reasonable lives.
Right. I try to lead by example if I'm going to, you know. And if somebody wants what I have, terrific. You know, they'll come up and they'll ask me about it. And this good friend, fortunately, he did come around. Sometimes you're not so lucky. There are a lot of guys who are like still out there, and it's like this one's got trouble. And you know, you hope you're going to see them. Maybe someday you will. Sometimes you just don't. We just lost a friend of ours actually in December. Because of issues.
You guys, it's been great having you here today. Do you guys have any
shows you
want to promote? Any gigs you want to talk about, Joseph?
Yeah, when are we doing the Moore show?
May
25th at the Regent Theater in Arlington. We're doing a show for Moore.
Mass Organization of Addiction and Recovery, correct?
That'd be a great show.
Yeah.
They do a lot of great stuff.
They do a lot of great stuff. So that's May 21st?
May 25th. Come on.
It's a Sunday night.
Snap out of it.
It's a Sunday night. And also May 21st.
May 21st or May 25th?
This one's May 21st.
May 25th is going to be me, Jack, Joey, and a bowl of wax fruit. It's going to be...
Whoa.
Wax fruit's headlining.
And May 21st, Comics for Recovery is sponsoring a showing of The Anonymous People, a movie about celebrating recovery. It's going to be at the Showcase Cinema in Woburn at 7 o'clock.
Ooh.
If you want more information, you go to my website, comicsforrecovery.com, and email me or something.
And we can list some of these on our website.
Yeah, it's a great movie, Jack and I.
It's really
great. I saw it with you. Mm.
You really can't say who's in it?
But we're trying to get the filmmaker here on the show to talk about that. Thanks so much for coming in today, you guys. Thanks for the laughs. Thanks for continuing to support recovery through Comedians for Recovery. And we hope to see you guys soon.
And plenty of tickets still available to the Regent. So bring the family down. Good fun for the whole family.
Uh-huh.
$20.
Yeah, don't be cheap. Just pay. Keep your yap shut.
It was a good show, Abby.
It was.
Thank you for listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Please check us out on Facebook and at www.right-turn.org.